Like it or not, here's the blunt truth. The PlayStation Network kinda sucks. Since its official launch on November 11th, 2006, PSN has been a thorn in the side of PlayStation's most ardent and hardcore audience. Anyone who spent so much as a day using PS3's online service in particular knows just how finicky, slow, and unwieldy the whole thing can be. But even with PlayStation 4, the network isn't great. Whether we're talking about the sometimes non-functioning PlayStation Store, the snail's pace at which games download, or the countless times the service has been completely unavailable, PSN is rife with problems, though for as bad as all of that is, nothing matches what happened to PlayStation Network in 2011. Beginning in April of that year, the PSN hack was one of the largest data breaches of any kind in the admittedly brief history of digitized storage. Affecting the sensitive user information of more than 77 million accounts, the event proved a massive problem for a company that was already stumbling with its newest home console, exacerbating Sony's at one time precarious financial situation. What followed was a 23-day network outage so catastrophic that Sony literally thought it best to completely pull the plug and rebuild offline. The resulting chaos would lead to millions in revenue down the drain, millions more spent on emergency repairs, a bevy of class action lawsuits, and a complete loss of trust within and outside of the industry. So how did all of that happen, and what's changed in the 8 years since the great PSN outage of 2011? Well, to fully understand and appreciate the complexity of the issue, including the problems the network still faces today, we need to rewind back to the PlayStation 2 era, before the PSN even existed, and explore Sony's first foray into online home console gaming.
PlayStation 2, it's on everyone's mind these days, and leading us into its North American launch, the excitement and anticipation surrounding it is starting to blow a few minds.
PS2 launched in 2000 to great fanfare, but even then, we didn't know its secret, that it would go on to sell a ridiculous 155 million units during its lifetime, making it the most successful home gaming console of all time by a substantial margin. While PlayStation 2's launch and launch-era game lineups were undeniably weak, its innards were state-of-the-art, and there was a promise ultimately realized many times over, of exceptional software to come. In the meantime, it was backwards compatible, allowing users to play their original PlayStation games. And it had a built-in DVD player, perhaps its biggest selling point, especially early in its life cycle when VHS was finally being thrown to the wayside and the DVD format was all the rage. But by today's standards, it was a quaint machine. Unless you wanted to rock some audio CDs on it, it was basically useless without physical game software. Unlike Sega's Dreamcast, which launched a year earlier, or Microsoft's Xbox, which came a year later, PlayStation 2 couldn't natively connect to the internet without external hardware. But PS2s could finally jump online with the external internet adapter beginning in August of 2002. Once online functionality was widely released, some players actually began internet play on PS2 in 2001 with Tony Hawk's Pro Skater 3 using a USB Ethernet adapter. It was immediately and painfully obvious that Sony was lagging behind. Unlike SegaNet on Dreamcast that came before it, or the Xbox Live brand that launched mere months after Sony enabled online play, PlayStation 2 didn't have a unified online service. Hell, it didn't even have an official name. The moniker we go by now, PlayStation Network or PSN, wouldn't come into being until PlayStation 3. Still, it's a much better acronym than PSNP, which we almost got as the network was going to be called the PlayStation Network Platform. While Sony wasn't as forward-thinking as Sega or as technologically advanced as Microsoft when it came to internet functionality, PlayStation 2 still provided fertile soil for online play to grow. Quite a few multiplayer games became successful on the device, like SOCOM and Final Fantasy XI, and a dedicated online playing fanbase grew loyal to the platform. In 2016, the last of PlayStation 2's officially supported servers were shut down, but even today there remains a group of hardcore fanatics keeping certain experiences alive via private servers. PlayStation 2 also had another feature lurking within its circuitry that went ignored or completely unknown to the majority of its console owners. But to a small subsection of its player base, it was much appreciated. Sony began selling Linux for PS2 in 2002, a homebrew development kit allowing users to essentially turn their console into a computer. Upon its original release, it sold out its entire stock within hours. The kit built upon a precedent set by NetEurosy, a publicly available development tool for the original PlayStation. These types of moves towards greater accessibility earned Sony respect within the hacker community, though as you'll find out, this period of admiration wouldn't last. Fast forward to 2009, and Sony finds itself in an interesting position. Its newest console, PlayStation 3, had released to middling reception 3 years earlier, and thanks in part to a high cost of entry,
$599,
the console was losing the generational race to the lower-priced and much better received Xbox 360. Helping the latter was that Microsoft had a well-implemented online structure in the aforementioned Xbox Live, which it invested heavily in during the previous generation, and doubly so at this point. And as more and more games began to release with multiplayer functionality, the benefits of constructing a coherent and always-connected ecosystem broke heavily in Microsoft's favor. At the start of the video, I expressed that the PlayStation Network just isn't very good, especially through an historic lens, and in the late aughts and early 2010s, Sony wasn't making its case any stronger. Their heavily pushed Second Life-esque PlayStation Home was a very public bust. The PlayStation Store was a disaster. There were constant crashes and downtimes, and astoundingly at one point, a bug in the system's clock prevented players from getting online, though not quite to the extent we'd come to experience later on. Making matters worse was Sony's silence when it came to addressing PS3's many online-centric issues. During the clock debacle, for instance, gamers across the internet had already determined where the problem stemmed from. Yet it still took Sony until the next day to warn consumers that if they weren't using PlayStation 3's new Slim model, they shouldn't turn their system on until a fix had been implemented. This slow pace at alerting the public would in some ways be mimicked when, later on, the stakes were far higher. Tuesday, April 19, 2011 should be remembered as one of gaming's many, many solid launch days. Mortal Kombat 9 and Portal 2 were both released to positive critical reception, and while not as widely beloved, the online-centric PlayStation 3 exclusive SOCOM 4 came out too, which had nonetheless built some buzz and anticipation. PlayStation 3 gamers had a lot to be happy about, even more so as Infamous 2's beta was entering its second week. Yet unknown at the time, lurking deep within the network at Sony was a bomb about to explode. Come April 20th, PSN was completely shut down. On the official PlayStation blog, the only information posted read as follows. Quote, "We're aware certain functions of PlayStation Network are down. We will report back here as soon as we can with more information. Thank you for your patience," end quote. With such little information to go off of, the internet did what it does best, went into full speculation and conspiracy mode. A Reddit thread was started by a moderator at psxscene.com, and they claimed to know the real reason PSN was down. As they would describe, this was all due to a firmware release known as Rebug. The general gist, as the theory went, is that the firmware allowed users to gain access to a developer network, and this in turn gave them the ability to put fake credit card information to download content for free. Of course, none of this was true, but that didn't stop even more people from tossing their ideas into the ring, further fueling wild, baseless speculation. PlayStation Home was set to launch a service update, so some folks wondered if that was the cause of the crash. Elsewhere, people were trying to connect the outage to a temporary failure of some Amazon servers. Many pointed their fingers at the hacker collective Anonymous as being behind whatever was happening. Not helping matters whatsoever was Sony's signature insistence on remaining frustratingly quiet and vague, tight-lipped action that only further fueled the public's imagination, though the silence wasn't permanent. On the second day of the outage, Sony Europe's official PlayStation blog revealed that Sony was investigating whether the issue was caused by, quote, "targeted behavior by an outside party," end quote. But that post didn't last long, as it was quickly and conspicuously removed. Meanwhile, back on the US PlayStation blog, Sony noted that services would be back up in just a day or two, with no mention whatsoever of the possibility of an external attack. That tidbit of information revealed by the European PlayStation blog was all it took for the press to latch onto the narrative that Sony had been hacked, however, a newsworthy item made all the more tantalizing by the subsequent deletion of the post. In real time, this explanation, in a sea of nonsense, seemed most plausible, since PSN had earlier experienced downtime due to a distributed denial of service attack, an attack that crippled PlayStation Network, though not critically. The culprit behind the DDoS attack was purportedly the aforementioned Anonymous, which is why so many suspected the group as being responsible for this new round of outages. The faceless Anonymous took issue with Sony and threatened to attack its web domains due to the company's hand in taking legal action against a man named George Hotz, who himself was wrapped up in the Linux removal debacle. Eventually, though, Anonymous would cease its attack, as they were not aiming to negatively impact Sony customers. Now, Mr. Hotz is relevant to this entire ordeal because he was on the front line of so-called jailbreaking PlayStation 3, using methodology that relied on PS3's Linux support. While a group called Fail Overflow is widely given credit for the jailbreak itself, a group that claimed it only wanted to run homebrew software and other operating systems, Hotz took things a step further. He extracted a so-called master key from the PS3, which he promptly published online. Essentially, this master key allowed any and all software, games or otherwise, to be authorized by the console. This, of course, led Sony to raising piracy concerns while scrambling to patch in a fix. However, and whether you want to believe him or not is entirely up to you, Hotz remained wholly opposed to those that would use the jailbroken console for nefarious means.
"They can't use my stuff with pirated video games. I made a special effort when I released my stuff to not support pirated video games. But more pressing than that is just the immensity of the press and, you know, attention Sony has brought to this issue that has never affected more than a very small segment of their customers."
Either way, Sony wasn't too pleased and almost immediately took the matter to court. Cases were filed against George Hotz, as well as other hackers who aided with cracking PlayStation 3's protective measures. The company claimed the parties violated the Computer Fraud and Abuse Act, the Digital Millennium Copyright Act, the California Comprehensive Computer Data Access and Fraud Act, and a handful of other copyright-related legal mumbo-jumbo. Concurrent to the Hotz controversy, Sony dropped the guillotine on PS3's Linux functionality completely, removing it in a controversial firmware update that effectively did what the PS3 Slim model already did, killed PS3's niche homebrew community. While Sony's reasons for doing so were undeniably reasonable, made in deference to vital security measures and to prevent piracy, its actions didn't settle well with many in the hacker community, and ultimately, that bubbling anger would be known. In between the early April anonymous attack and the PSN outage that came just weeks earlier, Hotz and Sony would settle the case after the hacker agreed to a permanent injunction, but as the proverbial saying goes, the shit had already hit the fan. On April 19th, unauthorized activity within the PlayStation Network and its music service Curiosity was detected. It would take Sony 3 days to admit in yet another blog post that it had discovered an external intrusion of its networks, but kept details light and didn't alert the public that their personal data may have been compromised. One day after the unauthorized activity had been detected, the company determined the issues being encountered were so serious and so detrimental that it decided to shut down the entire PlayStation Network, hence the great PSN outage of 2011. On April 26, nearly a week later, Sony alerted the world that it had determined that the personal data of 77 million accounts had been stolen. Anger ran high and consumer trust was destroyed, but the reason for the delay was complicated. As Nick Kaplan, head of communications at Sony Europe, would explain in yet another blog post, there was a delay between when Sony identified the intrusion and when its outside experts discovered user data had been compromised. The user information put at risk during the hack included names, addresses, birthdays, login information, email addresses, billing addresses, purchase histories, security questions, and credit card information. For Sony, the situation couldn't be any more dire. As if all of that wasn't bad enough, it was soon after discovered that PlayStation-adjacent brand Sony Online Entertainment had been hacked as well, resulting in yet another 24.6 million users being at risk of unwanted data dissemination. Found within its database was a file that simply read anonymous, "We are Legion." The fallout from the entire experience poisoned many who up to that point had remained loyal to Sony, and while in the long term wounds have clearly healed for most, with PlayStation 4 nearing 100 million units sold at the time this video goes live, that doesn't change the fact that the PSN hack was a major blow to Sony, one that it, or at the very least its gaming vertical, wasn't guaranteed to survive. On May 1st, three of Sony's top executives gave a press conference at their Tokyo headquarters. This may be the most lasting image of the entire situation, and an important moment from a cultural perspective too. Apologizing in traditional Japanese culture is serious business, especially at this scale and with such high stakes. Let's just say that this display gracefully conveyed Sony's collective shame over the breach. Not aiding Sony's execs in their quest for absolution, however, was that services still weren't up, and in the public's eye, the company had not been as forthcoming as it could have been. Not helping matters for the head of the PlayStation brand at the time, Kaz Hirai, is that days earlier he had appeared at a news conference in Tokyo to unveil some new tablet PCs. Originally, he'd been scheduled to take questions from the press, but that didn't come to pass, and during the event, he never once brought up the hack. 4 days later, he may have bowed, but by then, the optics were already tarnished. As day after day passed, and as days turned into a week, and then two, and then more, Sony struggled to assure its customers that the PSN would be back soon, often jumping the gun. During the May 1st Tokyo headquarters apology tour, for instance, Hirai made the misguided claim that some PSN services would be turned back on within the week. And at multiple points thereafter, users were promised returning online functionality that was nowhere to be found. It wasn't until May 14th when PSN was finally accessible in some portions of the globe, a whole 23 days after the fiasco began. And over the following couple of days, the service returned to normal. But news would return to the subject over the weeks, months, and years to follow, as the fallout from Sony's catastrophic data breach settled. Following the incident were various government investigations and fines, a drop in Sony's stock valuation, and a hefty loss of funds. The company would ultimately report that the whole ordeal costed $170 million. It likewise faced class action lawsuits galore, one of which it settled for $15 million. The company was also deeply embarrassed on the global stage, though a sort of dark humor could be found when, in June of that year, it was reported that Sony had laid off employees in a unit responsible for network breaches just 2 weeks before the hack. While battling with governmental agencies and lawyers, Sony began rekindling its relationship with consumers, though whether it succeeded or not in the moment is naturally a matter of personal opinion more than fact. It offered all PSN users free ID protection for a year, since God knows who had whose personal details. Then there was the vaunted Welcome Back package, which, along with some free games, gave users a free 30-day PS Plus membership. Much later, as part of a settlement as determined by various courts, it would also go on to offer even more free games to folks, but it took the company 4 years. PlayStation 4 was long out, and this situation long forgotten for many, by the time all the dust finally settled. The remaining loose end for Sony was to implement two-factor authentication, which it did a full 5 years after the hack in 2016. I guess that's not a huge surprise, though, given that in the month following the incident, Sony had to briefly turn off its services again after they received too many requests to reset emails and passwords, something it had mass emailed their base to do. If it's not yet obvious, Sony has never been a network-focused corporation. They say history repeats itself, and when it comes to Sony, there's no exception. During 2014, Sony Pictures Entertainment, the film production and distribution subsidiary of Sony Corporation, was hacked by foreign agents. Some of the information obtained was social security numbers and private emails, once again placing the company at the forefront of a hacking scandal. Seemingly always slow to adapt to the latest technology and security trends, Sony servers perhaps weren't as protected as they should have been. And even as we near the release of the fifth core iteration of the PlayStation, PSN still isn't a solid modern service. Some would be hard-pressed to even call it good. It's slow, unwieldy, and it loves crashing. Only recently were username changes allowed, something their direct competitor has allowed since 2005. I guess you can say that Sony has a history of lagging a bit behind.